Gentlemen, boys, and girls, welcome to another episode of the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for serious hockey fans. And it's, of course, me, Mike, here. And today I am being joined by a former Washington Capital who has a book out called Shattered Ice, Mr. Steve Seftel. Steve, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good up here in Waterloo, Ontario. It's nice to join you. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for taking the time to spend with us. You have this book called Shattered Ice that's out now, I believe, and it's out on Amazon. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to write your book?
Sure. I was born and raised in Kitchener, Ontario, and I played all my minor hockey in Kitchener. Drafted by the Kingston Canadians of the Ontario Hockey League in 1985. And then in 1986, I was drafted by the Washington Capitals in the second round, 40th overall, under then general manager David Poile. That draft was at the Montreal Forum. I then turned pro at age 20, starting in with the Baltimore Skipjacks of the American Hockey League. And the Capitals had just started their affiliation with Baltimore at that time after being in Binghamton. And I played the better part of 4 years in Baltimore. And I got my first NHL game in the 1990-91 season at the Joe Louis Arena against the Detroit Red Wings. And yeah, it was a great experience. I loved being in Maryland. I loved DC. It was a great place to play hockey and to live.
Now, you mentioned that your first game was at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. You note here in the notes that I have here that you're on a starting line with Dale Hunter and John Drews.
I have to tell you, Dale Hunter was the consummate leader and professional, and what a competitor he was. But I'll tell you another funny story about that, and Dale being a fiery player himself. That game, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings was Brian Murray, and his assistant was Doug McClain. They had just left the Capitals from the year prior and went to Detroit. David Poile had fired Brian, and Doug ended up in Baltimore, and then Terry Murray replaced Brian with the Caps. So the following season, my first game in Detroit against my former coaches, skating around in warm-up, I was pretty nervous. And I made eye contact with Doug McClain on the visiting or the home bench. So I cruised over thinking he's going to say something like, "Way to go, kid. You made it. Good for you. Have a great game." He looks at me. We make eye contact and he says, "Hey, Seth, I told Probert you're the goon called up from Baltimore." And that's a special chapter in my book, Shattered Ice. That chapter is called The Goon from Baltimore.
That's great. McClain's automatically sicking Probert on you right off the bat.
I think it was, as they say, the game within the game, and he was trying to get under my skin, or that was also his sense of humor. He's a great coach. I love playing for him, and He is a sharp-witted guy, and that was just probably, you know, his way of welcoming me to the league, shall we say. But long story short, I read Bob Probert's book years later, and I had nothing to worry about. Unless you're a legit tough guy, he wasn't going to
He wasn't going to mess you up or anything
no,
like that.
No, no.
Now, you had mentioned, you know, the thing where you're facing off against your former head coach and Brian Murray and Doug McClain. What was it like to actually play for them leading up to that point beforehand?
Well, Brian Murray was a really intelligent hockey man. He was also a fiery personality, real passionate man, real passionate hockey man. And I really respected him and his understanding of the game. He was a coach that could get the most out of his players. All the coaches you play for give you something you can take with you. But for me personally, Doug McClain was always my favorite coach. I had him in Baltimore for half a season. And I think, you know, because of some of the mental struggles I had when I was playing and still kind of dealt with in my adult life, I was always looking for someone I could trust. And Doug was that person for me. And I would say Doug was a player's coach. And the real compliment I can give Doug is like, you felt like he was in the fight with you and that he was just in there with, you know, digging in the trenches with you, and that I'd run through walls for him. He just was a real motivational type guy, and he certainly resonated with me as a player, and he made me believe in myself, I guess, is another compliment I can give him.
Now, what was it like, because we've talked about the Murray brothers and McClain, what was it like playing for Barry Trotz?
Well, when I first met him, he was a scout with the Capitals organization. So I had known him for my first couple training camps as a scout. And after Doug McClain left the Skipjacks organization, they hired a coach named Rob Laird, who also was a Caps assistant for a year, the year prior to that. So they made Robbie Laird the head coach in Baltimore, and Barry Trotz was his assistant. So that we were together for 1 year. Then the following season, Coach Laird got fired and Barry Trotz took over for him in Baltimore. That was his first head coaching job professionally. So I only had the one season with him. And really, that was the start of an amazing career for him. I think you could kind of tell there was something special coming in his path down the road. And you know, he certainly is still involved in the game and has become one of the most respected coaches in hockey. It was kind of special for me just to be a part of the beginning of his career and to see him when he was just starting out and growing into that position.
Now, one thing also I want to go back to when you made your NHL debut, your first game was at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. What was it like for you to actually make your NHL debut on the road at an arena like Joe Louis Arena?
Oh, I was totally stoked for that. I mean, I grew up growing up in Kitchener. It's only 3 hours away from Detroit for a drive. So it's a city that I spent a lot of time in growing up at youth hockey tournaments and exchanges with some of the other teams down there. So we were very familiar with it. In some ways it was a, if you had to start somewhere, it was almost familiar to me, if I can say it that way, for a road city because of growing up in Southern Ontario, which was, but still Detroit being an original six organization, certainly was special. And the Joe Louis Arena was one of the bigger buildings at the time in the league. And I certainly was excited to be there and team with Yzerman and Fedorov and of course, Bob Probert. And they had great teams back then.
Right. Now, one of the things that I see here that you've noted is that one of the things about your hockey career is that it included a chance that for childhood meetings with players like Daryl Sittler and Wayne Gretzky. What was it like for you to be able to meet them?
Phenomenal. It's interesting. I met Wayne Gretzky when he was 16. He played for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. They were, which is in the Ontario Hockey League, junior hockey up here in Canada. And my hometown, the team here is the Kitchener Rangers. So Wayne Gretzky was a rookie, and our coach, we had a practice before a Rangers game, and our coach brought Wayne Gretzky into the dressing room for autographs for the team. And he was already, a young phenom, if you will. And everybody was well aware of, you know, what he was doing and who he was. It was just kind of, I mean, he had been on the radar for a while already, and it was pretty special. Growing up in Kitchener, you know, the Ontario Hockey League is kind of the next best thing to the National Hockey League. The Toronto Maple Leafs are down the street, about an hour away. But if you can't get tickets there, OHL hockey is really where a lot of people end up going to see the future stars. And Daryl Sittler, I grew up watching him. Again, he was a Toronto Maple Leafs captain. So with the Leafs being the biggest game in the province of Ontario, and it's a hockey mad province, and Toronto being the biggest city in the province, most people in Canada at that time were either Leaf fans or Montreal Canadian fans. There really was no there was either one or the other, kind of going back again to the original six. And Daryl Sittler being the captain of the Leafs, getting his autograph as a young boy was also a big thrill.
Now, one of the things that you talk about in your book, Shattered Ice, which is available on Amazon, and we do have a link on this article with the interview with you to go right to the website for the book. You talk about truthful hockey experiences that are exposed also while silently suffering from mental health issues that you didn't understand when growing up in your teen years. Would you like to elaborate more on that so people can have a better understanding in that regards?
Sure. When I first went to Kingston in junior, it was kind of the first time it really started to affect me. And then when I signed my first professional contract is when things started to kind of pick up steam, and I didn't feel well. I was always very anxious. I suffered from panic. But at the time, I went to my doctor, and this is in the 80s. In the 80s, we weren't talking about mental illness at all. It wasn't part of the vocabulary. And I went to see the team physician, and he said to me, "I can't find anything wrong with you." So in my mind, when I left there, I just thought, okay, this is me. There's no alternative. I just have to deal with this. So that kind of continued on and plagued me for most of my professional career. And then I didn't really get diagnosed officially until 2 years ago when I had what I call a mental breakdown. I kind of crashed, and I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, which leads to anxiety. And then that anxiety leads to the most paralyzing form of anxiety, which is panic disorder. And it really helped me understand, once I finally got the diagnosis, what I was dealing with all those years. I had this pattern where I would strive to kind of get to the top, and then I would just kind of crash and run from anxiety and panic. And, you know, that plagued me in hockey. It plagued me a bit after hockey when I went to school, and then it followed me into the workforce. So it was a relief to finally get some resolution, but it took a lot of years, and it's nice. I'm glad now we're finally talking about it as a society, and the message is getting out there. And that's part of what I'm trying to do with my book, is I'm just want to talk, create the dialogue, because it's long overdue.
And speaking about dialogue, an article came out earlier this morning about Tampa Bay Lightning's Jamel Smith, where he was actually battling issues where he wasn't sleeping for like a month. And Patrice Bergeron of the Boston Bruins actually talked to him and helped him get the help for his, you know, mental health.
Yeah.
So as you said, back when you were playing, you didn't have that type of access. Now a guy like Jamel Smith, who looks like he could make the Tampa Bay Lightning this season, is getting that help. What more can be done to actually improve upon that?
Well, certainly I think it's time for the leagues to start some sort of program. We've done that. I compare it to concussion. If you go back several years, we weren't talking about concussions either. And now they have programs in place where in football and in hockey, if you get your bell rung and they've got those spotters, if you need to go to the quiet room, as they call it now, to get someone to medically look at you, then that's what they do. And they pull you out of the game. And now, maybe 10 years ago, that might have seemed like a real stretch, but now it's a program and we have a standard in place. So I think with mental health, we need something similar where it's not necessarily happening during the game, but players need to feel comfortable coming forward and bringing their problem, that kind of mental illness or challenges, to the team, and without feeling like there's going to be repercussions for bringing that forward. So it probably has to be some sort of team medical staff that's going to deal with it, but we have to eliminate the stigma And the only way to eliminate the stigma is to make people comfortable talking about it.
Now, one thing that we have been learning over the last few years is the effect of concussions and CTE, especially with CTE affecting the mental health of those who have suffered multiple concussions and stuff like that. And you say, now we're talking about, although there's a good argument that, yeah, we're talking about it, but the people who are in charge aren't really talking about it. What do you think about the current, I guess you could say the current status of what the NHL is doing in regards to concussions, especially with the fact that a concussion can be hidden as an upper body injury and not truly listed as concussion and get it diagnosed properly like it should?
Well, I think there's always more work to do. I guess what I would say is it's remarkable how many years we ignored the head and the brain. And it you know, now that I've dealt with my own mental illness and out in the kind of in a public way, but also got the help I needed, and then watching some of the other players are going through with concussion, what has made me realize is, you know, I don't know how we ignored the head for so long. And it seems so obvious to me that we missed something real significant for players before us. And the challenge going forward is, how do we fix it in the future for the, you know, even when I think of my own boys playing hockey, like I'm afraid for them because of the physical impact of the game. And I think we have to, as people like me and others that in the league have to be leaders, and we have to somehow come together as a group. I'm not saying I have all the answers for that, but there is a lot of work to do.
Right. And one of the things is, one of the biggest advocates in that regards has been Hockey Hall of Famer Eric Lindros with Rowan's Law in regards to the concussions and youth hockey. What do you think about the work that Eric Lindros has done, especially because he is somebody who has had his career ended due to concussions, like Pat LaFontaine and Paul Kariya, and he's actually taking a big stance to help curb concussions from the youth level so they don't end up having some of the problems that him and others have had to endure?
Honestly, I'm not familiar with Eric's work. But the one player that I have seen recently, and I admire what he's trying to do, is Daniel Carcillo. He's been pretty vocal lately as well, and I've listened to a couple of his short videos on some of the struggles he's had and some of the things he's doing to get better. So I think the more players that come out, and then, you know, when you talk about mental illness, we can talk about Robin Lehner, like what he did at the NHL Awards last June.
Yes,
was fantastic. And for him to stand up there and say, you know, I have a mental illness, but it doesn't mean I'm mentally weak, I think that just empowers other people to stand up and also talk about it. And that's what we need, the dialogue, and we need it to, as you mentioned, we're talking about it, but maybe they're not talking about it at all levels. This is still relatively new, so we're working on it. There's still stuff to do.
This is part of the baby steps.
Baby steps, yeah. Yeah.
And I have also seen a lot of Daniel Carcillo's stuff, which I actually love the fact that he's coming out and he's talking out about it, especially in regards to the concussions, and he's challenging the NHL executives on it. But I think a lot of people are missing the point of why he's doing it, and because of the way Daniel Carcillo played when he was in the league. So a lot of people are like, oh, you're a hypocrite. It's like, no, you're allowed to look back on your career and understand and go, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done the things that I did as a player. Because the ramifications of not only what I did to myself, but what I did to other people is going to have a lasting effect. And I think Carcillo understands that.
When you're playing, though, you're in the battle and you're in the heat of the battle. It's really, you know, you can't think about that when you're doing it, because you'll never get to the levels you need to get to. But I understand what you're saying. I guess my message with all of it, with the mental illness and with even with concussion, but like in my book, In Shattered Ice, what I talk about is I've always felt alone. I always felt like I was doing this by myself. So you mentioned Jamel Smith having some assistance from Patrice Bergeron. Like I didn't dare share it with anybody when I played. So the message from my book is you got to go get some help. The help is out there, but you have to find it. And I didn't know where to find it when I was a player, and I really didn't believe anyone wanted to hear it. And that's what we need to change.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the whole saying that men don't cry type thing. But it's like, no, you should be allowed to cry. Because you gotta let yourself out, because we are human. We all deal with things. And if you don't let it out, it actually can become a much more dangerous thing down the road.
I heard when I was in, I went to see a psychotherapist. One of the things she said to me is, when you have trauma in your life, and there's trauma takes on different forms, but she said, you store that trauma in your body. She said, picture having shelves in your body, and every trauma you have, you put a glass jar on the shelf. And she said, over time, as those traumas accumulate, you run out of space for all those glass jars that are stuck in those traumas, and eventually they crash to the floor and because there's no room left. And when that happens, she said, you either implode, which is hurt yourself, you explode, you hurt others, or you get physically ill or sick. And that really made a lot of sense to me. In my case, I got physically sick, and that's the point when I went to get some real help and saw my medical practitioner, got medication, saw a psychiatrist, saw a naturopath to get my nutrition in order, and really used a holistic method to get back on track.
Right. And that's good. And it's good that you're having this conversation, not just with me, but everyone else that you're having it with. You did the book, which is a great way to get that out there, which again, you can click on the link in this interview where you see the picture of Steve's book, Shattered Ice. It'll take you right to the Amazon page for the book. Since we're coming up a little bit on time, what is one of your greatest stories that you got to experience as a hockey player outside of what we've talked about?
Well, I was one of my favorite stories to share is in 1990, it was the first time the Capitals got out of the Patrick Division. So it was a big deal for the organization. They finally fought their way out of the Patrick Division, the old Patrick Division. And they were facing the Boston Bruins in the semifinals. And I was up on the taxi squad. And I have a chapter in Shattered Ice called Catching a Cab with Grapes. So the taxi squad is the boys from the minors who are called up at the end of the season to support the Stanley Cup drive. So game one of the series was at the Boston Garden. My roommate was Steve Malte, another Baltimore skipjack and former Capital. And we were going down to the garden. We came out of the hotel. We were flagging down a cab. And from behind us, we heard a voice and some footsteps. And we heard, let's go, boys. Let's get a cab. And we turned around, and it was Don Cherry. I mean, the true Canadian icon, Don Cherry. And we hopped in the back of the cab with him. We took a cab to the Boston Garden, which for him is like his second home. And I remember he told stories the whole way over, and I could not take my eyes off him because he's the master storyteller. And when I remember we got to the rink, he said, I know how much you guys make in the minors, so I'll get this one. And then we walked into the garden together, and he went one way, we went the other way. And the Caps ended up losing that series in a sweep, 4-0.
Yeah, that was actually the Capitals' first time making it to the conference finals when they played Boston in 90.
Yeah, yeah. And then 96, they played in the first cup final, right, with Detroit?
Yeah, that was 1998.
Was it 98?
Yes. Okay. I am like a massive Caps historian. All right. So 1990 was the first time the Caps made it to the conference finals, which they were swept by Boston. But then in 1998, the Capitals and the Bruins faced in the first round, which the Capitals won in 6 games on the route to getting swept by Detroit in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, okay. I was close with 96.
Yeah, 96 was the great Colorado-Detroit massacre with Claude Lemieux.
Oh, right. I remember that. Chris Draper. Yeah.
Yep. Like all the useless knowledge in my head. No wonder I'm still single in my life.
was a very memorable moment for me. And I guess the another one that all young players remember is draft day. Draft day for me was at the Montreal Forum. And, you know, the historic old building with so much history and folklore surrounding it with the players, the legends that played there, like Rocket Richard and Ken Dryden and Guy Lafleur and Jean Beliveau, on and on. So to have the draft at the Montreal Forum and then to go in the second round, it was a thrill and certainly a day I'll never forget and a memory that will always be lasting with me.
I've been to Montreal before, and I will say that I'm very sad in that I never got to see where the Forum stood, because by the time I got to go to Montreal, it was already taken down.
Oh, yeah.
But they had, like, the little marker of where it stood. And but I did get the tour, the Bell Center, when it was, which at the time was still known as the Molson Center. Yeah. And, yeah, so that was kind of cool. And then seeing the old Maple Leaf Gardens from the outside was really cool as well. But
I call that chapter Ghosts of the Montreal Forum because the building is so legendary, along with Maple Leaf Gardens. All the original six buildings, whether it's Chicago Stadium, you know, the Boston Garden, Madison Square Garden is still there. I mean, those original six buildings had a feeling and a character, which now I find the rinks are kind of cookie cutters. Like, they feel like you're shopping in shopping malls some ways, but
yeah.
I mean, the fans, I guess, make it special, but back in the day, the actual buildings were individual and unique in their own way.
Right. So Steve, real quick, since we're coming up near the end, where can everyone find you on social media?
On Twitter, I'm at Steve Seftel, and just like my name is spelled. And on Instagram at Steve Sef.
And that's SEF, correct?
Yeah.
And on Facebook?
Facebook as well. Shattered Ice is the name of my page. Books, like you mentioned, the book's available on Amazon in the United States and in Canada. It's a funny story. I had one sold by Amazon Australia.
Really?
Yeah, a Canadian living in Australia. I actually had bought one Kindle version, and then I had a fan from my old Kingston Canadian days buy one, and she lives in Auckland, New Zealand. So I had two purchased through Amazon Australia, which was pretty special.
Look at that, man. You go worldwide.
Yeah, it's gone international.
It's going, cool. Going international. So, and of course, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow TXHT by going to TXHTHockey.com. And of course, on Twitter at TXHT_hockey and Facebook at Facebook.com/TXHTHockey. We didn't get the underscore for that one because we got cheated out on it on Facebook for some odd reason. Don't ask. But Steve, what parting words would you like to give everyone and pitch the book, my friend?
I'd like to say for everybody out there, from a mental illness standpoint, you're not alone. Their support is out there. You have to go find it. Shattered Ice, the book for me, was part of my healing process. It was a cathartic journey writing the book. I never thought I'd necessarily be an author when I was playing hockey. I threw the idea around once in a while, and then I started writing it, and then that's just before I became sick, and it ended up being part of my therapy, and I threw myself into it 100%. I guess initially it was a little dark, I will say. I was writing it with some anger and angst and frustration, so I was really in not a great place at the time, but my editor said, "Is this the book you want to write?" And I said, "I really want the book more to be about the joy," so I changed my direction a bit and started writing about the joy, the people, the experiences, and, you know, Washington, D.C. is a big part of that, as is Baltimore up the highway, because they were big parts of my hockey career. So I talk about all those special places, people that I met, and like you mentioned, we were talking earlier, I feel so fortunate to have played for Brian Murray, Terry Murray, Barry Trotz, Doug McClain. David Boyle was the general manager. Jack Button was the director of player personnel and recruitment. I just feel so fortunate to have been around those men. Like, they're so respected and such great hockey men. And it was a, well, I say in the book too, it was a it's a privilege to play hockey. So Shattered Ice is my whole career, and a tie in with a tidy bow on top.
All right. Well, with that, Steve, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we will see you on the ice.